the death of Senator Paul Wellstone in an airplane actually a homicide? Is there a pattern to assassinations by the deep state that could be playing out with the recent death of the president of Iran? If the death of the Iranian president is identified as orchestrated by Israel, could a major Middle East conflict take place? What are the signs that the near death by assassination of the Slovakian prime minister might have been linked to his strong opposition to the COVID vaccine and the planned pandemic agreement? This week on the Global Research News Hour, we are examining the prospect that the deaths of Ibrahim Raisi of Iran and the near death of Robert Fico of Slovakia may have been high-level assassination attacks by officials looking at containing an official threat. We first talked to Jeremy Kuzmarov of Covert Action magazine about what is believed to be past assassination attacks by U.S. operatives and some of the patterns that they have had in common. In our second half hour, we speak to independent geopolitical and military analyst Drago Bosnick about his assessment of the suspected attacks of mid-May as being decapitation strikes against enemies of U.S., NATO, Israel hegemony. Finally, Canadian physician and frequent global research contributor Dr. William Mackis explains his recent video in which he suspects the case of Slovakian Prime Minister Robert Fico was intended to send a warning against those who oppose the WHO's new proposed pandemic agreement. On this week's program, two convenient tragedies. Were high state operatives complicit in the attack on Robert Fico and the death of Ibrahim Raisi? Bringing you the analysis beyond the media headlines, the Global Research News Hour is on the air. Welcome to the Global Research News Hour for the week of May 31st, 2024. The program is funded by the Center for Research on Globalization and produced in collaboration with campus community radio station CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. I'm your host, Michael Welch. The show seeks to provide listeners with access to analysis of some of the major issues shaping our world today from thinkers, researchers, and unique political personalities rarely addressed by major media. Our shows are featured on partner radio stations across Canada and the United States and available through streaming or download at the site globalresearch.com. We acknowledge that this was produced on the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe, Innu, Oji, Cree, Dene, and Dakota, the birthplace of the Métis Nation and the heart of the Métis Nation homeland. The settlers share the land and the water and the resources with our Indigenous partners. Moving forward, may we pay reparations for the ways of the past, repair the damage caused by colonialism, genocide, and stolen assets seized through faulty promises, treaties, and documents like the Doctrine of Discovery, and move forward into the future in full and respectful partnership. Now it's time for News Notes, a sampling of articles from the Global Research News site. Listeners should know that some of the articles may run against common messaging about sensitive subjects and are not all endorsed by this radio station. Nuclear war is on the table. Politicians are unaware of the broader implications. Say no to nuclear war. Say yes to humanity. Say no to WW3. That was from the 2024 introduction to the article under the headline, Video, the Privatization of Nuclear War, a quote, first strike, unquote, use of nuclear weapons as a means of, quote, self-defense, unquote, by Professor Michel Chossadovsky and James Corbett, posted May 30th. They know some of us are following the war. On our side, we, voyeurs, are what we are, let's face it, gather some cash for humanitarian aid that has little chance of reaching its destination. Share stories of another dead infant, cite further proof of genocide, post our heartfelt poems, declare how our eyes have been opened, sign another petition. We hail a college valedictorian for their strong words. We endorse the unequivocal statement of the single American congressperson who cries out so eloquently, quote, I am never going to stop saying Palestinians deserve freedom. that we need to free Palestine, no armaments to kill Palestinians, unquote. They are watching us, as however modest or feeble our efforts, we cannot but turn our head away in shame. If not shame for our personal inadequacy, then shame for our membership in this government and our duplicitous press. That comes from the article, Genocide in Gaza, Being a Spectator or Bearing Witness, by Barbara Nimri Aziz, posted May 30th. Despite the pressure, on May 20th, ICC prosecutor Karim Khan made his request for Israeli and Hamas arrest warrants. Among the charges against the Israeli officials are extermination, using starvation as a method of warfare, willfully causing great suffering, and intentionally directing attacks against a civilian population. Prosecutor Karim Khan's request has now gone to a panel of three judges who will determine in the coming weeks whether the request is granted. But pro-Israel forces in the U.S. are trying their best to throw sand in the wheels of justice with threats of new sanctions. One ultimatum already came from Senator Tom Cotton and 11 other Republican senators in a toxic April 24th letter. That comes from the article, The ICC Takes on Israel and the U.S. Congressional Mafia, by Medea Benjamin, posted May 29th. According to the investigation, the United States, the United Kingdom, and other European allies sought to increase ammunition production to guarantee supply flows to Ukraine. However, their capacity to manufacture artillery ammunition still falls short of Russia's. In fact, Russia maintains dominance despite facing U.S.-led sanctions and competing with the West's combined economic effort that theoretically should surpass Moscow. As a result, the article highlights Ukrainian soldiers on the front lines say that for every shot they fired at Russian positions, Russian troops responded with about five projectiles back. Sky News reported that Russian factories are expected to manufacture or refurbish around 4.5 million artillery shells this year, compared to a combined production of around 1.3 million shells in European countries and the U.S. That comes from the article, Russia produces artillery cheaper and three times faster than Kiev's Western allies, by Ahmed Adel, posted May 29th, originally published on InfoBricks. These are just a few of the featured articles appearing last week on the Global Research website. Regular visitors to the site are encouraged to send monetary contributions by fax, mail, or online. Just go to globalresearch.ca and click Donate on the menu bar. On May 15th, the Prime Minister of Slovakia, Robert Fico, was hospitalized after an assassination attempt, which he survived and is currently slowly recovering. And then only 4 days later, Iranian President Ibrahim Raisi, together with other senior officials, died following a controversial helicopter crash. Both of the individuals just mentioned certainly have backgrounds that have taken them off of the U.S.'s most favored leaders. But are there details that go beyond this to suggest that it's more than a coincidence? Well, Covert Action magazine has been a source for reliable, consistent, and accurate investigative reporting from its origins in the 1970s, exposing covert action, including the Kennedy assassinations. Jeremy Kuzmarov is the managing editor of Covert Action magazine. He joins us now to talk more on the subject. It's a pleasure having you back on the Global Research News Hour, Jeremy. Welcome.
Thanks again for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you.
You've covered a range of these sorts of assassinations over recent decades. We ourselves have covered the four great assassinations of the 1960s. The Kennedy brothers and Martin Luther King and Malcolm X. But I noticed you've covered similar deaths, and one I hope you can focus on in more detail is the death of Senator Paul Wellstone. He died during a plane crash in 2002. It was more than 20 years ago. It was 10 days before an election. And there are odd details about it that have led political figures to suspect it was actually an assassination. You wrote this article a couple of years ago, and I would appreciate it if you could take maybe 5 minutes or so to expand on his death. But before we talk about the broader trends of assassinations, what leads so many people to believe that this was an assassination?
Okay, well, and first I should pay tribute to the research of James Fetzer, who wrote a book about this. I did a whole series on political assassinations, some better known than others. And yeah, I'm grateful to all these researchers who've really probed into it. And their book, I drew often on them. I mean, their books often got no exposure. And they were, either marginalized in the academy or journalistic world, or even maligned or ridiculed. But they really have done good research to uncover the truth. And yeah, sometimes it takes years to piece together what happened. I mean, in the Wellstone case, well, in general, yeah, they're rarely coincidence in politics. I mean, when it's really convenient, you become very, very suspicious. When there are serious political implications, like what's going on now. And in this case, yeah, as you say, 10 days before an election, and Wellstone was a key vote in the Senate. He was against the Iraq War. He was a key vote, would have been a key vote against the war. The election was also key. I mean, as far as Republicans sustaining control of the Senate at that time, that crucial period. Of the Iraq War going on or about to start. The Bushes hated Wellstone. Like when Wellstone was first elected to the U.S. Senate from Minnesota, yeah, and Wellstone was very kind of unusually progressive for U.S. politics, although he wasn't perfect in his record. He did support the Balkan conflict, but on a lot of the issues, he aligned with a very progressive position. He opposed wars. He was really, far to the left on the American spectrum as far as policy positions. And 91, when he was first elected, he made a point of accosting George H.W. Bush when he was then president for his, for orchestration of the Operation Desert Storm, the Persian Gulf War, which Wellstone was vehemently against and said it was a war for oil. So, Bush and Cheney hated Wellstone. And the circumstance was he was taking a plane. Now, yeah, since I wrote the article several years ago, I can't remember every last detail, but I know he was, he was doing some side trips, and the circumstance of his crash made clear that there was foul play. The excuses they gave, things like pilot error and weather, just didn't hold up. And there was evidence from the crash site that there were deliberate sabotage. And I think the theory that Fetzer puts forward of a direct energy weapon, as far-fetched as it may sound, but that they use high-grade military weapon to take this plane down, direct energy weapons, and that no far not so far-fetched because they use these weapons in U.S. wars. They have them on hand and they can use them for these purposes too. And one thing I remember that was really odd was like the FBI was on the scene right away. The crash was in a very remote area, yet somehow the FBI got on the scene like right away. And there were no FBI headquarters, anywhere near there. It would actually have to have been like a 2-hour drive. And yet somehow they're there right away to cover it up. They're very strong indicator that this was a political assassination of a progressive figure who stood in the way of the Bush-Cheney policies of escalating the war on terror and going to war in Iraq. And so I guess that's what I can say to summarize that case.
Yeah. I'm just wondering if there are other things you could say about it. I mean, I understand that he was the difference between the Senate being majority Democrat, and then suddenly it was majority Republican, which is further fuel for
Yeah, how
the
convenient. I mean, how convenient can you get? And these kind of gifts don't just happen. But then, and you look into it further, it's very clear that there was foul play. And again, the fact that the FBI is there right away gives you an indication that they were tipped off about it, and that there was a cover-up in place after.
Yeah, was he potentially like could he have considered a run for the president himself if, maybe in the 2004?
Potentially, yeah, he was a popular figure in the party. He adopted progressive positions that were popular among the U.S. electorate. Thing like health care, he really pushed for. I mean, he was like kind of Bernie Sanders, who is very genuine, in pushing for thing like health care that the public wants. Universal health care. Higher. Taxes on corporations. I mean, he was generally against the warfare state. He was against the war on terror. I'm not sure Afghanistan, but he wasn't perfect, but he was, far more progressive than most other U.S. politicians, and he had a lot of good personal qualities to him, and he had a history of fighting, corporate power. So he was a genuine firebrand. I mean, we don't have too many of those. He's like a Denis Kucinich type. It's a kind of rare breed in American politics where he puts his money where his mouth is, and he actually gives a good speech but follows it through, and people respected him, and so he could have gone far. Yeah, I agree. He could have been potentially the front runner for the 2004 election.
Well, there have been a lot of suspicious airplane and helicopter accidents that have been used to remove political leaders from office. I mean, not just this man Paul Wellstone, and I guess I'm referring to the death of President Raisi. But I mean, for example, you have Omar Torrijos, who died while in a de Havilland Canada DHC-6 Twin Otter of the Panamanian Air Force. It crashed on July 31st, 1981. It was a presumed assassination. Ecuadorian President Jaime Roldós Aguilera, who died on May 24th, 1981, in a plane crash. It was an assumed assassination. And enhanced by the controversial absence of the plane's black box, the second Secretary General of the UN, Dag Hammarskjöld of Sweden, whom JFK called the greatest statesman of our century, he was killed in a plane crash on September 18th, 1961. And then there are others, and it's always assumed that the It has a, there's strong involvement in well in Hammarskjöld's case there was a strong involvement in liberating Congo that killed him. But do all these sorts of deaths have certain, I guess, common patterns and modalities in common where you see it as more likely an assassination and not just an accident?
Well, and I would add to what you're saying, because I've done this whole series, and I've looked into many different political assassinations. They had drawing on authors who've written books or extensive articles that are very well researched. And there are these cases in the United States, not just foreign leaders. For instance, Hale Boggs, who was the Speaker of the House and was a dissenting member of the Warren Commission. His plane crashed under very mysterious circumstances. I believe a small plane. In the early 70s, I did an article on the case of Dorothy Hunt. Well, this was a larger commercial jet carrying CIA operative Dorothy Hunt, who was the wife of E. Howard Hunt, and had all kind of incriminating documents related to Watergate and possibly knowledge of the CIA's involvement in Watergate. And her plane went down and was clearly sabotage. There's the plane of John F. Kennedy Jr. If you look into that case, and he was starting to get involved in politics and was going to be running for the governor of New York in 2004. That would have been potentially a stepping stone for his, becoming a presidential candidate in the future. And we know how the so-called deep state loves the Kennedys, especially the fear of a Kennedy coming in and reopening investigation into the assassination of John and Robert. So these assassinations are occurring on American soil. And each of these cases, if you look into it, it's clear there was a cover-up. It's clear that the official story, usually they blame pilot error or weather, but then when you look into it, it actually proved to be a clear night, and the pilot was really an ace pilot. And they're like distressing, the absence of distressing signs with the command, with the air tower controllers, and there's evidence of either bombs on board. And I think in the Wellstone case, there was clear evidence of a bomb and probable use of direct energy weapons. So there is a consistent pattern. In fact, I've seen officials quoted saying, oh, that's the best way to carry out an assassination, an airplane, because they have to, question the whole craft. It doesn't look like an assassination or a murder. And it's easy to make claim that the plane crashed from natural reasons. And people are prone to believe, oh, it was a plane crash. But in a lot of cases, these planes are actually sabotaged. And the airline industry generally has an incredibly good record. Actual air crashes are very rare. And so a lot of cases, I've found they're sabotaged, and they say this is the best way because people won't suspect it was an assassination. And I think it's easier to cover up a murder this way, and people are not just looking into the death of that one person. So, yeah, there's a worldwide, sadly, you have a murder machine, at the top of, it may be corrupt cabals who control various aspects of the US government are able to carry out these criminal acts, whether abroad or domestically. And then, people have a right to be suspicious of these recent events, given the people targeted. I mean, Fico, the Slovakian former prime minister, was an outspoken critic of the war in Ukraine and said this war didn't start with the Russian invasion. It started, what we all know, in 2014 with the Ukrainian coup and the murder of Russians in eastern Ukraine and pro-Russian officials. And he was also outspoken on the COVID-19, the official story, rare among foreign leaders. He was critical of the narratives about climate change, become kind of sacrosanct, and didn't toe the line on a number of other issues. So this is a rare, outspoken, a leader who's taking independent positions. And we know what happened to those kind of leaders historically. They're overthrown, they're undermined, or they're assassinated. I mean, yeah, the helicopter crash. I mean, I don't know. I haven't been able to look into these cases very much or seen. I mean, news agencies aren't really doing any independent reporting. They're just giving the official story. So I don't know. I mean, it's possible you can have a crash, but I mean, convenient timing with the Israel-Gaza war going on and the neocons, working on overdrive to destabilize Iran. Very convenient to have the Iranian leadership killed, and then that creates a power vacuum, and you can manipulate things further, or that could be a good opportunity to go in. I mean, they've been plotting for regime change for years and years, and they've been scheming within Iran. So the motive certainly is there. The timing is very good. It's worth investigating what happened. And we may learn with time that the official story is not true.
Could you also talk about the media and like what kind of repetition have you spotted in the way the media typically reports on the deaths of these suspected victims, I mean, including Wellstone?
Well, the media just report the official story with a plane crash, and they never suggest foul play. They never do any independent investigation. They just follow whatever the official agencies report, whether the government or the FBI, White House or FBI says this, and they just report that, and they basically censor anybody who would carry out an independent investigation and find troubling patterns. That person will never appear on any mainstream media network, and that's probably true of most alternative media, with the exception of your website and hopefully covert action. You never find these people on Democracy Now, websites like that. Never. I've never seen them. I've never seen articles on these topics there. Maybe something on the Malcolm X assassination, years ago. But so they're censored everywhere, even in the alternative media. But they can publish books, and the books are usually independent press, small presses. But I mean, I would encourage readers to judge for themselves. I mean, if I get these books, I try and assess the evidence. And often I find the evidence overwhelming, like this book by Fetzer I was mentioning on the Paul Wellstone. It's this overwhelming evidence that there was sabotage, and all these assassinations I was pointing out, like Hale Boggs, the Dorothy Hunt. There are books written on these topics that, in fact, in the case of Dorothy Hunt, their son, St. John Hunt, wrote a book about it. And I interviewed him after, and he's a really nice guy. But he really investigated this, and he knew that the CIA was behind the death of his mother. So, people have to look to independent book publishing to get the truth. You may find, and I think the Global Research website is good, is willing to look into this. But yeah, they just don't even probe into it, and they blacklist anybody who would try and investigate this or suggest that they're crazy and that these are crazy theories. If the theory is ever brought up, it's simply to dismiss it, and to dismiss the person with a theory as that he's some kind of crazed lunatic. But if you look into the cases for yourself, you find right away that something is not right. And then again, there's the political implication. I mean, for any crime, you have to ask who's going to benefit. I mean, history is so full of conspiracies and criminal activities to shape the course of history. And I mean, coincidences like that don't just happen. That these leaders who are going against Western interests just suddenly die of plane crashes, to suddenly get assassinated by lone nuts. I mean, history really doesn't unfold that way. Unfortunately, Western country and the United States are run by corrupt criminal elements who use violence to get their way.
Okay. Well, I think we're going to have to leave it there, Jeremy. I would like to thank you for coming on and sharing your covert action insights and resources with our listeners. And by the way, you're running a spring fundraiser, so you might want to check that out as well. Jeremy Kuzmarov, thank you so much for appearing on the show.
Thank you. Yes, and please support the magazine so we can do this kind of research, and yeah, that we can give a voice to these independent researchers who want to unearth the truth so the public could know and could stand up to criminal elements who are using assassination as a tool of power, which is unacceptable.
Amen. Jeremy Kuzmarov is the managing director of Covert Action Magazine. Visit him and other writers on the site covertactionmagazine.com.
You're listening to the Global Research News Hour, broadcasting from CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg and from partnering radio stations across Canada and the United States.
I'd like to bring forward another interview. Individual who's reflected on the idea of the attack on the Slovakian prime minister and the death of the Iranian president as being possible decapitation strikes. His name is Drago Bosnick. He is an independent geopolitical analyst, and military analyst. He writes frequently for Global Research, and last week he wrote an article entitled "Dangers of Normalizing Assassinations of Non-Compliant Foreign Leaders." Drago, it's good to have you back on the Global Research NewsHour. Welcome.
The pleasure is all mine. Thank you for inviting me.
Let's get right into it. Talk about the details of the case of first President Raisi that seem suspicious to you. I mean, what red flags are there in the official account of his death?
Absolutely. First of all, I just want to say that I'm not sure if this was an assassination or if it was, who did it. I cannot I cannot guarantee who could have done that. However, there are various reasons why I think it could have been a decapitation strike, as you said, because, first of all, there was this strange arrival of a U.S. C-130 transport jet that was flying into Azerbaijan right at the time when President Raisi was visiting, was having like a bilateral meeting of some sort with President Ilham Aliyev of Azerbaijan. So this is a pretty strange coincidence. There are various other strange coincidences. The fact that the Bell 212 helicopter that he was flying in, along with his foreign minister, Mr. Abdullahian, it didn't have an emergency response system, which is something that even the most basic helicopters, civilian helicopters, have, let alone a helicopter that was supposed to transport the first man in power in Iran and his foreign minister. So like, that's the least that the helicopter was supposed to have in terms of functioning systems in case of an emergency, but this did not work. And the Turkish, I think, transport minister, I forgot his last name, he confirmed essentially that this system was not working on the helicopter. So that suggests that there was some foul play, probably. As I said, I cannot confirm that, but I think we will probably get more information as in the next several months, maybe even years, who knows. But I think as more things are revealed, we'll realize that this was not a mere accident or just a coincidence that happened. I understand to a certain degree why Iran itself would not want to reveal that this was like a direct assassination attempt, because first of all, this would be an embarrassment for its services that are supposed to protect their top leaders and people in the government. And then it would also imply that they would need to respond to this. And that's already something that would push Iran into war with various other Middle Eastern powers, specifically Israel and the United States itself, which still operates a large number of bases in the Middle East. So I think if Iran has some information, they will reveal this in due time when they are ready for a possible direct confrontation with the U.S. and its allies in the region.
Well, follow up on that, because, I mean, following the Iranian attack on Israel on April 13th, Raisi himself declared that if Israel attacks Iran again, quote, "there will be nothing left of that entity," unquote. I mean, Raisi was considered a martyr by Iranian official spokespeople, meaning they consider this a murder and not an accident. If this is how they feel, is there a possibility they could act on the suspicion and attack Israel?
Yes, I think that's very, very possible. However, we should not forget that Israel also has thermonuclear weapons as well as means to deliver them anywhere in the Middle East or beyond. So I think in terms of realpolitik, Iranian leadership realizes that it wouldn't be wise to attack Israel directly while jeopardizing its own existence, because this is where we get to the point of both countries being destroyed or wiped off the map. If Israel knows it's going to be wiped off the map, it will fire everything it has on Iran or whoever is attacking it. And the same goes for Iran. If somebody's attacking Iran and wants to destroy the country, then they will also launch whatever they have. And I think this is how all of the countries in the world that are powerful enough to destroy their opponents think. in terms of strategic deterrence. So that would surely happen. However, what I think at this point, if Israel or some other country had its hand in the murder, if it's a murder of President Raisi, they will not act on it until it's the right moment. And when that moment comes, they will also probably reveal their evidence for the potential foul play we've been talking about.
I'd also like to bring up Robert Fisco, Prime Minister of Slovakia, for a minute. Very different outcome. I mean, he survived after being shot, apparently, by a lone gunman. Fisco, too, was seen as an opponent of U.S. interests. Are there aspects of his near death that don't quite jibe with you?
Absolutely. I mean, first of all, it was quite obvious that this was done. This was organized by someone way more powerful than just some, let's say, a dissatisfied poet who doesn't like the way that Fico is running Slovakia. It would be too naive to think that's the only motivation for this assassination attempt. However, what actually happened recently is that the EU Enlargement Commissioner, Mr. Varhelyi, actually threatened the Georgian Prime Minister, Mr. Irakli Kokabidze, with Fico's fate. So that threat alone is pretty much the smoking gun of who actually tried to kill the Slovakia's Prime Minister, to me at least, because why would he mention something like that to a Prime Minister of a country that is essentially or effectively allied to the US and NATO and the EU, and which is actually one of the EU candidates, or it's one of the countries aspiring to become a member of the EU? Why would they mention something so extreme to such a high-ranking official of another country if they didn't have anything to do with it? I'm pretty sure it wasn't like a friendly warning, because why would you want to warn your friend about something like that? Essentially, it sounds like a threat. So that in itself exposes, and it's as I said, it's a smoking gun. It's the smoking gun of the potential EU or NATO involvement in Fico's assassination attempt.
What are the aspects of Fisco's leadership that point to him as being an opposing force to the United States?
Well, I mean, the simple fact that he refuses to push Slovakia further into the Ukrainian conflict. And we've seen that in his statements, in his proclaimed policies before he was elected. Before he was elected, Slovakia was actually pretty on board with U.S. policies in Ukraine. It even donated its entire fleet of MiG-29 fighter jets to the Ukrainians. And he has completely changed this foreign policy approach to a more like Orban-esque strategy, where he would want to remain neutral in a potential conflict, which I honestly speaking, this is the smartest thing any leader would want to do, because when the big guys fight, you just don't want to be around. You want to make sure that nobody that you care about is hurt. And obviously, if a leader cares about his country, he would want to avoid being embroiled in a war where nuclear superpowers are lobbing ICBMs and nuclear rockets at each other. So, but of course, this is not very, this is not good for the interests of NATO and the EU, which are determined to push the entire bloc of Western countries into the war with Russia. And any sort of non-compliance is punished. It's sanctioned, it's simply discouraged in other ways. And I think as the elites, the political elites in the West are becoming more desperate, they are simply conducting desperate measures to ensure that everyone stays compliant.
Mm. The title of your article is Dangers of Normalizing Assassinations of Non-Compliant Leaders. Yeah, so it sounds like you suspect there could be more. I mean, where could this be headed? I mean, who could this escalate to?
Well, last year I wrote an article titled "The Dangers of Pentagon's Decapitation Strike on Putin," and let's say we could also add Xi Jinping or any other global leader that they don't like. First of all, like, how would a country that is a nuclear superpower respond if somebody attacks its top-ranking leaders, its top-ranking politicians, or even leaders such as Putin or Xi Jinping? Obviously, it wouldn't end very well, right? It wouldn't end well for the world, because if, like, where does it end? Where do you stop? Where is the limit of the escalation? Because if there is no limit to the escalation, we're talking about World War III and the end of the world as we know it, or the end of the world in its entirety. So I think this is the danger of the way of thinking, of strategic thinking in the political West. I presume that they might think it's just necessary to remove these powerful figures from other countries. And they don't understand how important these powerful figures are. If we look at, for example, the U.S. President Joe Biden, he's essentially just a figurehead. He doesn't really make any decisions. I mean, it would really be ridiculous to even think that he makes any sort of serious decisions. This stands in stark contrast to China and Russia, where President Putin and President Xi Jinping actually do make very important decisions. They have massive teams around them, but they do make important decisions, and they're able to hold very, very important conversations, unlike the U.S. president, as we've all seen. So in that regard, we have to see the differences in approach, in the philosophy of leadership in these different global superpowers. So, for instance, it's far more important for the Russians and the Chinese that their leaders are there, that they are present, than it is for the United States, where there's this oligarchy, which is essentially controlling the entire country. So it doesn't really matter if Biden is there or someone else is there. It would be a lot harder for someone to take out the entire U.S. leadership. On the other hand, neutralizing global leaders such as Putin or Xi Jinping would be a far, far more consequential for those countries, namely Russia and China, because these leaders are, as I said, actual policymakers, which is simply not the case in the U.S.
Mm. Well, certainly when you remember World War I, it started with an assassination and then just everything just kind of exploded. And I feel that something similar is on the horizon. I mean, between the Russia, the Russia NATO and now Israel, this is like a powder keg that could go off. But Drago Buznik, I want to thank you once again for coming on our show and sharing your thoughts with our audience.
Absolutely. The pleasure was all mine, and I look forward to the next one.
So thank you. Drago Buznik is an independent geopolitical and military analyst, and writes frequently for Global Research. Dr. William Mackis is a Canadian physician with expertise in radiology, oncology, and immunology. He earned a Governor General's Medal and is a University of Toronto scholar. He's also the author of more than 100 peer-reviewed medical publications. He's also the author of COVID Intel, the Substack with regular updates on COVID-19 facts and information not transmitted by mainstream media. He's recently written an article on the near assassination of Robert Fico. He has a video, a 15-minute video on it, and he postulates the possibility it was more involved than one angry shooter named Juraj Centula. And he also suggests it was related to his position, that's Robert Fico's position, on the COVID vaccine and on his refusal to allow his country, Slovakia, to sign onto the pandemic treaty. Dr. Mackis also happens to be Slovakian-Canadian, so we thought it would be wise to invite him on the show to elaborate further. Good afternoon, Dr. Mackis. Thanks for joining us on the Global Research News Hour.
Thank you very much for having me.
Now, a suggestion that you made in the video was that it was a warning against Fisco's stance on COVID and the WHO's pandemic agreement plan. So the WHO or some entity aligned with them were involved somehow in the assassination attempt, although the official story of Fisco's near murder was that Juraj was a lone wolf. Are there any details you have discovered on close inspection that tend to contradict this narrative?
Well, I can tell you, being able to speak Slovak and read Slovak, I listened very closely to Slovak Prime Minister Robert Fico's videos, interviews. And it's fascinating because he was very vocal about his opposition to Slovakia joining the WHO pandemic treaty. In fact, he said that it will absolutely not happen. And, you know, that's a very powerful stance. I mean, we have Joe Biden signing up the United States. We have Justin Trudeau in Canada, you know, signing up Canada. So, you know, the big powerful countries, many of them are signing up to the agreement. But, you know, you've got here a small country. And really, he's going against the grain of what the EU wants as well. So that was a very strong stance that he took, and he was definitive about it. He said there was absolutely no way that he would sign up his country and his people and to allow the WHO to have any say in how the country's governed. Another interesting thing that people don't know about is that a couple of months ago, Robert Fico launched a formal investigation, a government investigation into COVID vaccine injuries and vaccine deaths. And he gave a speech in the parliament, in the Slovak parliament, where he talked about the skyrocketing cardiac injuries after the COVID vaccines rolled out. He talked about how greedy and gluttonous the pharmaceutical companies have been in pushing these jabs. He talked about the excess deaths in Slovakia. There are 21,000 excess deaths. And he said that you know, the people who rolled out the vaccines, the previous government was involved in all kinds of corruption, and that they have 21,000 excess deaths, the blood of these people on their hands. He put together a formal government committee led by a physician, and he said they would have full resources and that he would make the results of the investigation public. And you know, if you think about it, this is the first world leader who has acknowledged the severity of COVID vaccine injuries. So he talks about mainly cardiac injuries, skyrocketing cardiac injuries in Slovakia since the vaccines rolled out. And he's also the first world leader to acknowledge the skyrocketing excess deaths since the vaccines rolled out, and he has a number. 21,000 excess deaths is a lot for a small country like Slovakia that has a population of just over 5 million. And so I think these are very important you know, aspects to the story. The interesting thing about the shooter is that, you know, he's a 70-year-old. They say he was like a security guard at a mall, that he's a poet, but he's definitely a leftist activist. He founded a number of leftist organizations. And it's interesting that recently a story came out that the Georgian prime minister, Irakli Kobakidze, was actually threatened by an EU commissioner over a new law that the Georgia is passing in their country, where they want to scrutinize and investigate foreign NGOs, non-governmental organizations, and foreign agents. And so this EU commissioner, had a talk with the Georgian prime minister, and he said, you know, you might end up just like Slovakia's prime minister, Robert Fico, if you continue investigating these NGOs. And, you know, then he had to backtrack it and say that, you know, it was taken out of context and so on. But he literally threatened the life of another leader in Europe by referring to the assassination attempt of Robert Fico. So it's clear that this is not some lone wolf event, that this assassin may have been hired by the EU or may have been hired maybe by, you know, U.S. intelligence agency. We don't know the details of this, but it's just a fascinating story.
Yeah, well, it's been suggested that this fellow, I mean, who was fired up over Fico's refusal to send aid to the war in Ukraine against the Russians. I mean, he even wrote a post about it in the blog Movement Against Violence. But nothing, he hasn't said anything about COVID or the pandemic treaty or the WHO or anything like that that I can see. So what in your mind singles out COVID as opposed to Ukraine as the true motive here?
Well, you're absolutely right. You know, he was very vocal about the Slovak prime minister's, you know, stance on not willing to send any more weapons to Ukraine. But the Ukraine issue is not an active issue right now. You know, it's the Ukraine issue has been on the back burner for a while now. You know, if there was, let's say, some arms shipment that, you know, Fico had just blocked or something like that, you know, that would make a little bit more sense. But, you know, why, you know, are they blaming something that's a non-issue right now? The thing that is an issue right now is the new investigation into COVID vaccine injuries and deaths. That he launched that, I believe, the speech that I saw was in January of 2024. So this is a very recent investigation that he launched. And the WHO pandemic treaty is happening as we speak. And so I think the issue of the Ukraine arms and him being upset that Robert Fico was opposed to sending any more arms to Ukraine, I think it's a cover story. It doesn't really make sense in the context of what's going on in the world right now.
Mm. Just to challenge your assertions a little bit, if I may, the Robert Fico survived the attack. I mean, normally it's argued that these sorts of operations have backups, like moles, they're called, against the patsy. So, for example, JFK had the man at the grassy knoll backing Lee Harvey Oswald, for example, who's the patsy. You know, the same thing with Robert F. Kennedy. There was a second shooter there besides Sirhan Sirhan. So, and that sort of thing. So this man really appears, Fisco, from what I can see, And maybe there's more going on, but he really seemed to be working alone. And then Fisco will recover, and the assassination wasn't successful. So is this not a breach of standard tradition of these sorts of deep state assassinations?
Well, it depends on what the objective, you know, of the assassination was. I mean, you know, was it really to kill him, or was it to send a message to other leaders? Now, you know, it's interesting because the shooter got very close. I mean, when you look at the videos, and I show those videos in my podcast as well, he got very, very, he got within a few feet, maybe within 4 or 5 feet. So it was at close range. He did fire off 5 shots. It seemed like the security or the Secret Service were not prepared, not ready. They certainly didn't seem to screen the people who were there. So there was a barricade. There was a metal barricade, and there were some, you know, senior citizens that had come to see the Slovak prime minister. You know, he had just been in a government meeting. So he comes out and he goes to shake these people's hands. How come those people weren't screened for weapons? You know, how come that anyone could just roll out, you know, off the street and get within 5 feet of the prime minister and be able to fire off 5 shots with the, you know, security not even batting an eyelash by the time they realized what was going on. Now, when the first initial reports came out, no one knew whether he would survive or not. In fact, he was very seriously wounded. Over the next several hours, his life hung in the balance. And, you know, I had put out another video that was an update from the hospital by one of the government officials who said that, you know, and again, it looked like they didn't know if he was going to live or die. You know, the reports to the mainstream media and to Western media were that, you know, it was a life-threatening situation. They didn't know if he was going to make it. And after many hours, you know, one of the Slovak government officials who was in the hospital sent out a video saying that it looks like the operation will be successful and that, you know, he will survive. So, you know, you had assassination attempts on Reagan, right? Ronald Reagan, and he survived. You had assassination attempts on the Pope, and the Pope survived. So, you know, it's hard to tell. It was a life and death situation, however, and being shot at close range 5 times, you know, I think the intent was to kill.
Hmm. Well, this was an attempt to kind of safeguard the draft pandemic agreement and the amendments of the international health regulations, the WHO's plans, if you will. But it appears as if, like, according to the news that's come out, they're not going to be able to achieve a consensus. So it seems like this is a major victory for opponents like Fico. So I'm wondering, has this attack? I mean, what are the what significant impact would it have? And are the matters in your view still of concern?
I think they are very much of concern. I have seen a number of freedom fighters celebrating that, you know, the WHO pandemic treaty has been defeated. Dr. Merrill Nass, for example, Dr. Peter McCullough, a number of, you know, these health freedom fighters seem to have concluded that, you know, there is a victory, that, you know, the WHO pandemic treaty has been defeated. I have not seen that from, you know, the WHO officials themselves. You know, Tedros talked about it as a temporary setback. And he says he's actually quite confident that it will be passed and that, you know, they'll have to have some emergency meetings and so on and maybe make some alterations. But it's not over. And I think, you know, it still remains on the table. They're still trying to push it through. I think there's now some meetings in June where they're going to be discussing some revised drafts. So, you know, I would not be so quick to jump to celebrate a victory because, you know, these people are not going to give up something as big and important as the WHO pandemic treaty, which essentially gives away the sovereignty of most countries to the WHO. There's no way they're giving that up. And so I think at best, maybe, you know, it's been delayed by a couple of months. And of course, and that's why I think we have to keep fighting against the WHO pandemic treaty in any way we know how. We have to keep pushing back. There's a number of freedom fighters who are in Geneva right now. I believe there is a, you know, a sort of a truck rally or a protest.
Convoy,
that's right. That's the word I was looking for, convoy. Yeah. And so I think it's important to continue to fight back and keep pushing back because I really don't get the sense that it has been defeated. It seems to me that it has just been delayed.
Very interesting. Dr. Makis, I'd really like to thank you for participating in this discussion with our listeners.
Thank you very much for having me.
Dr. William Makis is a Canadian physician and author of his Substack, COVID Intel. You find it at makismd.substack.com.
That was our brief look at decapitation strikes historically and in the modern era. Now for next week, May has been an era of celebrating and championing labor. In all the events that followed, there was very little attention to the major elephant in the room of class warfare and labor struggle in the 21st century. Artificial intelligence, or AI, is now becoming a reality, and it's starting to put people out of work. And the threats to the working class go beyond that. We will focus on this reality with a few commentators from all over the world on next week's show. You're listening to the Global Research NewsHour, a program funded by the Center for Research on Globalization and produced in collaboration with campus community radio station CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg on the traditional lands of the Anishinaabe, Innu, Oji-Cree, Dene, and Dakota, the birthplace of the Métis Nation in the heart of the Métis Nation homeland. The show airs on partner radio stations across Canada and the United States and is available for streaming or download at the site globalresearch.ca. To leave feedback on this program, please email globalresearchnewshour@gmail.com. I've been your host, Michael Welch. Thanks once again for joining us.